I'd like to ask about another burning climate crisis. More than 1,100 people have died in heat waves in parts of Europe, and huge wildfires in Portugal, France, and Spain, Britain under a national emergency. You tweeted on Tuesday, quote, "Brutal heat waves across the country and the globe are shattering records. The climate crisis is here and now. Action cannot wait any longer." Yet we're seeing so many countries, as a result of the war in Ukraine, going back on their proposals, on their moves in terms of addressing climate, the climate crisis. Your take on the issue?
Climate change has been one of my personal top priorities, but also a top priority for the Progressive Caucus. It's why we fought so hard for that $500 billion investment in Build Back Better. It's why we held up the infrastructure bill multiple times, even after every Democratic senator had voted for it and sent it over to us. But we wanted to see Build Back Better passed, which we did pass. But we also, since that has died, thanks to one senator, Democratic senator in the Senate,
refusing to give his support,
we have also called for a climate emergency and a whole slate of executive actions. And that is what we think the president must do now.
Are you sorry he's not doing it today?
He's got to do it quickly. I mean, it's okay if it's not today, but it should be today, tomorrow, or in the immediate days, because that's how urgent it is, and we need him to use every power that he has.
Congressmember Pramila Jayapal, we thank you so much.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX in Portland. Kendall Northwest is a new circus and fine arts festival, including intro courses in the fire arts, fire spinning, live music, and competitive circus games. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you been thinking about furthering your involvement with KBOO? The annual election is coming up in September, and that means the Board of Directors are recruiting for new members. The nominating committee will hold virtual informational sessions on Wednesday, July 20th at 7 p.m. and Tuesday, July 26th at 5:30 p.m. For more information and to obtain a meeting link, go to kboo.fm/boardinfo. That's kboo.fm/boardinfo.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, New data shows healthcare costs in Oregon have spiked dramatically. Critics are skeptical of a plan to use new tech to sense gunshots in Portland. And in international news, the European heat wave claims 500 lives in Spain. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. Oregonians' health care costs rose 49% between 2013 and 2019, with the largest increase being the jump in drug prices. A new study by the Oregon Health Authority shows that prescription drug prices rose 185%, more than $2,200 per person per year during that period. Professional services like primary care visits and medical procedures at a doctor's office had the second highest jump in cost, with the prices rising 75% for people with commercial insurance and 56% for people with Medicare. Last year, the Oregon legislature considered a proposal to set upper limits on what companies could charge for prescription drugs, but gutted the plan after the pharmaceutical industry spent nearly $2 million lobbying against it. The Oregon Health Authority study only covered through 2019, while an analysis released today by Patients for Affordable Drugs estimates that pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. have raised drug prices 1,186 times so far this year. Between June 24th and July 5th, pharmaceutical companies increased prices for 133 products. David Mitchell is the founder of Patients for Affordable Drugs. Mitchell said, quote, "Big Pharma continues to raise drug prices with no regard for the health and financial well-being of Americans. We must put an end to the drug corporation's unfettered ability to dictate prices at the expense of patients," end quote. Launch prices are already outrageous. Nearly half of all new brand-name prescription drugs launched in the U.S. in 2020 and 2021 had an initial price tag of $150,000 or more per year. Meanwhile, the largest pharmaceutical companies continue reaping record profits. Portland is considering deploying a new technology that can detect gunshots, but critics say it may not actually help solve the issue of gun violence. Eric Tagadoff has more.
A police oversight group has formally recommended that Portland adopt a technology known as ShotSpotter to help tackle gun violence, but the technology has been met with some skepticism. ShotSpotter uses artificial intelligence with data collected from hidden microphones to determine the location of gunshots and inform the police department. Dan Hahn is a strategy consultant in government and civic technology based in Portland. He says the technology still has to make some leaps to determine if the sound it heard is a gunshot.
The thing about technology that we really need to understand is that it's not magical, it's not necessarily more reliable, it's not necessarily going to 100% always classify sounds in exactly the right way.
A study last year from Chicago, where ShotSpotter has been implemented, found it led to more than 40,000 dead-end police deployments over less than 2 years. The Focus Intervention Task Force Community Oversight Group submitted its recommendations to Mayor Ted Wheeler and the City Council on Monday. Hahn says if the technology is adopted, open data is key to ensure accountability. JMHE, with the organization Freedom to Thrive, points out the technology is still experimental and has even faced a challenge to its constitutionality as sole evidence in an Ohio case. One of the biggest criticisms is that it could lead to more policing in communities of color. Amechi thinks the resources that would be used to bring ShotSpotter to Portland should be used instead to improve lives in communities of color.
They instead use it to manipulate people into manufacturing consent for the surveillance system that puts more police into their neighborhoods. And we've seen already that more police in neighborhoods does not make us safer. It makes us actually more at risk of police violence.
A ShotSpotter spokesperson says communities affected by gun violence deserve a rapid police response, which gunshot detection enables regardless of race or geographic location. At a community meeting last week, ShotSpotter stressed that the technology would only be used to detect gunshots. But Chris Bushick, who heads the group PDX Privacy, believes the microphones could be used for other purposes.
I really want to believe them, but I've been disappointed many times by tech companies that have broken their promises. And there have been at least two criminal trials where prosecutors have tried to introduce into evidence voice recordings that were obtained from gunshot detection systems.
More than 120 cities are contracted with ShotSpotter, according to the company's website. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Mississippi abortion clinic that was involved in the U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade ended a lawsuit yesterday. The lawsuit had sought to block Mississippi from enforcing a near-total abortion ban. Jackson Women's Health Organization dropped the litigation one day after its owner, Diane Derzis, told the Associated Press that she sold the facility. The clinic's furniture and equipment have been moved to a new abortion clinic that should open soon in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The Mississippi facility would not be reopened even if a state court allowed it to do so. An attorney representing the clinics said, quote, "If the clinic is not in a position to reopen in Mississippi, it no longer has a basis to pursue this case in the courts," end quote. Multiple court battles over abortion access have emerged or are about to following the Supreme Court's June 24th ruling, which gave states the authority to set their own laws on abortion. For example, West Virginia's only abortion clinic resumed scheduling patients yesterday after a judge blocked enforcement of the state's 150-year-old abortion ban. The Mississippi clinic stopped offering medical and surgical abortions July 6th, the day before Mississippi enacted a law that bans most abortions. Mississippi was one of several states with a trigger law that went into effect after the Supreme Court ruling. That law, in Mississippi, passed in 2007, says abortion is legal only if the pregnant woman's life is in danger or if a pregnancy is caused by a rape reported to law enforcement. It does not have an exception for pregnancies caused by incest. On July 5th, a state court rejected a request by the clinic to block the trigger law from taking effect. The clinic appealed the ruling to the state Supreme Court, invoking a right to privacy. The Supreme Court's previous Roe v. Wade decision was also based on a woman's fundamental right to privacy. Because the clinic is dropping its lawsuit, the Mississippi Supreme Court will not have to issue a new ruling. In New York, Buffalo's East Side is divided over the reopening of Topps Friendly Market grocery store location, where 10 people were killed in a racially motivated shooting in mid-May. One part of the issue is that it's the closest grocery store for local residents in an area that's considered to be a food desert. Edwin Vieira has more on the reopening.
The Topps supermarket in Buffalo, where a racially motivated gunman killed 10 people and injured 3, has reopened almost exactly 2 months since the incident. Residents and community leaders on Buffalo's east side have mixed emotions about the store's reopening. The neighborhood is considered a food desert, with no other grocery stores close by. But residents understandably feel discomfort about shopping in the store again. Buffalo's poet laureate Jillian Hainsworth explains her array of feelings about the reopening.
I feel like in a perfect world, we would have saw this Topps get torn down and replace it with like a memorial park and build a new grocery store across the street. But we have to grapple with reality, which is that it is opening and a lot of people in this community do need it.
Deacon Jerome Wright of Voice Buffalo is circulating a petition for the store to close permanently at that site and for a memorial to the victims to be built in its place. As part of the store's renovations following the shooting, an in-store memorial to the victims includes a poem entitled Water by Hainsworth. Topps officials said the opening would be quiet and respectful. The East Side is still reeling in the aftermath of the shooting, and for many, Marie Moy, Director of Operations of the Erie County Restorative Justice Coalition, says emotions are all over the place as they continue to heal.
I think that we're all still going through that grief cycle. There's sometimes where days we're angry, there's some days we're just sad, sometimes we're just feeling disbelief that this has even happened.
Moy says her organization has been part of conversations in the community to ensure there are more resources accessible to local residents. Community leaders have also called for the grocery chain Wegmans to build a store on the east side to help address the need for retail food options. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
Yesterday, the U.S. House passed the Respect for Marriage Act, which codifies same-sex marriage nationwide and strengthens other marriage equality protections. The bill, which must still pass in the Senate, is a direct reaction to the Supreme Court's recent ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade. The bill would explicitly bar anyone from denying full faith and credit to any out-of-state marriage based on sex, race, ethnicity, or national origin, regardless of any state's law. House Judiciary Committee Chair Jerry Nadler said, quote, "Today's vote was about protecting the children and loving families whose whole lives rely on the constitutional guarantee of marriage equality," end quote. For more on the House vote to codify same-sex marriage nationwide and more national political news, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
They are coming for the right to marriage.
After the House passed a bill to codify national recognition for same-sex marriage, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre noted other court-established rights could be at risk following the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade. Ohio Republican Jim Jordan argued the Respect for Marriage Act is unnecessary and pointed out numerous states banned same-sex marriage before it was legalized by the Supreme Court.
The Obergefell decision undid what 35 states have on their law in their respective state. 30 of those states, it was the vote of the people, as I said before. This legislation is going to just, I guess, go after the decision of the respective states and the voters in those states.
Along with all Democrats voting in favor, 47 Republicans also supported the measure. A group of Democratic senators introduced a bill to nearly double funding for the Title X family planning program over the next decade. Minnesota's Tina Smith says it would protect critical access to reproductive health care.
So I ask Senate Republicans who claim to be champions of family planning and women's health to join us in supporting Title X.
Meanwhile, outside the Supreme Court,
be advised you are currently engaged in illegal demonstrations.
17 members of Congress were among 35 people arrested for blocking traffic outside the building during an abortion rights protest. Cori Bush of Missouri was among those taken into custody as the group called for action from President Biden.
So many of our constituents have been reaching out to us afraid.
In Massachusetts, today, President Joe Biden will unveil new steps to combat climate change. Biden has not decided whether to declare an emergency to unlock federal resources to combat the problem. During a House Transportation Committee hearing, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said the cost of electric vehicles is currently not within reach for all consumers, but promoted tax credits.
The more pain we are all experiencing from the high price of gas, the more benefit there is for those who can access electric vehicles.
Buttigieg also clashed with Congressman Troy Nels, who questioned Biden's mental fitness.
I will look beyond the insulting nature of that question and make clear to you that the President
of
the United States...
Have you spoken to any other cabinet members about implementing the 25th Amendment on President Biden?
Of course not.
A rematch in 2024 between Biden and Donald Trump could be another close race, polls show. Should the former president run, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell expects competition from his own party.
Look, I think we're going to have a crowded field for president. I assume that most of that will unfold later, and people will be picking their candidates during a crowded primary field.
And a Georgia district attorney says 16 fake electors are targets of an investigation into efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election results. All are fighting subpoenas to testify. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Kay Rambo, the editor-in-chief at Street Roots, about their new article outlining the ineffective referral process from the city's homeless sweep efforts. At 6, it's Rural Roots Rising, then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 61 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will see some clouds but still warm weather with a high of 87. Today in history in 1934 was an important day in the West Coast waterfront strike. In Seattle, police fired tear gas and clubbed 2,000 striking longshoremen. The Oregon governor on the same day called out the National Guard to break a strike on the Portland docks. The quote of the day is from New Zealand mountaineer Edmund Hillary. Hillary and Sherpa mountaineer Tenzing Norgay were the first two people confirmed to have summited Mount Everest. Hillary said, quote, "I have discovered that even the mediocre can have adventures and even the fearful can achieve." As former U.S. President Donald Trump continues to tease a run for office in 2024, those who work with election officials across the country are warning that his supporters are working to overturn the 2024 election results if he isn't the victor. Ross Brown has more.
The midterm election on November 8th will be a referendum on President Joe Biden and Democrats.
but also a preview of what could happen at polling places 2 years from now. In 2020, election officials didn't worry about violent incursions into voting tabulation centers or mass protests that turned deadly. But that was before the big lie took hold, the debunked theory that election fraud caused Donald Trump's loss to Biden. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says it isn't a good sign that the Texas GOP's new platform claims Biden didn't win legally.
Certainly Texas is one of those states where lies about the election have taken hold. A state which had record turnout and saw record victories for Republicans, and still lies about the election have taken hold.
Becker argues that by insisting Biden didn't win, Republicans are prolonging baseless claims and creating the possibility of unexpected and dangerous repercussions in this year's midterms and the 2024 elections. Government officials at the local level are responsible for certifying election results, and Becker believes some who still hold to Trump's assertions could refuse to do so. And while he has confidence that the courts would eventually resolve issues, he notes that isn't their job.
That's a tremendous burden on the courts. There might be an amount of time where we're not sure what is going to happen. And that amount of time is going to be a ripe environment for chaos, confusion, and the potential for political violence.
Becker also believes continued claims of fraud are further dividing Lone Star State residents.
Texans are starting to point at each other as if they're the enemy, just because they might live in a different county or in a different urban versus rural environment, for instance, or might look different. That is a major concern because at its core, what election denial is about, it's about crippling democracy.
He did not reveal his intentions, but Donald Trump said Thursday he's already decided about whether to run again in 2024. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
A vote to change the name of Klingman's Dome in the Great Smoky Mountains back to its original Cherokee name passed a tribal council resolution in North Carolina. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A resolution supporting the name change of an area in the Great Smoky Mountains known as Klingman's Dome back to its Cherokee name has passed the Tribal Council of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians in North Carolina. The effort is being led by two Cherokee women who went before the Tribal Council last week. LaVita Hill and Mary Crow are conducting research and meeting with Cherokee elders, language speakers, and are inviting community members to join them in their efforts to return the name to Kauai. Crow says they're seeking assistance from Cherokee language speakers on the spelling and pronunciation of the word, which has different dialects.
Kauai, Kulahi, however you pronounce it, because we have different dialects. We have to understand that, and we do understand that. What we hope to do is to be able to come as a collective community group of elders to us. I'm a middle-aged one still. I ain't hit that mark yet. But to our younger folks, you know, we see this as an avenue for our younger generation to relearn who and what we are as a people that Creator placed us here.
Crow urged the council not to let a language barrier halt their efforts.
That area and in itself to who it is for our people have been there for thousands of years to millennia. So what we would like is, like I said, is to get council's blessing to pass this resolution so that we can then continue to work on with those individuals who want to join us in getting this process on up to the federal level.
They're hopeful the name change will be approved by the federal government, pointing to name changes taking place across the country, including one recently in Yellowstone National Park. The mountain is currently named after politician and Confederate Army General Thomas Klingman. This past weekend, the Coquel tribe held its first ever bass derby in another effort to remove the invasive fish from their waterways by offering cash incentives. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, the big prize fish is still at large.
Before the derby, the tribe tagged almost four dozen bass with microchips. Each carries different cash prize values. 200 people showed up and reeled in more than 2,000 smallmouth bass. Some anglers won $50, $100, and $200. But one fish is still roaming the waters with a $1,000 payoff. Fred Fry is a commissioner with the Coquille River Port District and derby organizer.
The better the price tag, the better the turnout.
smallmouth bass. They're an invasive species. They're not indigenous. And they're unbalancing the ecosystem, and they're eating all the small salmon fish. So we have a much diminished run before they ever get out in the ocean.
The next derby is Labor Day weekend. Details are on the Ports District's website. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Walker River Paiute Tribe and the U.S. Department of Agriculture recently signed a cooperative agreement to promote economic opportunities to farmers and producers and to increase access to locally sourced, fresh, healthy foods for the community. The tribal community, located in rural Nevada, will work with a local food producer to source and distribute dairy, eggs, and produce to the reservation. The program was authorized under the American Rescue Plan to improve food and agricultural supply chains. The tribe is the first to sign the USDA Local Food Purchase Agreement. Agency officials say additional agreements with tribal governments will follow in coming weeks. USDA is expected to award up to $400 million through the program to state and tribal governments. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Prime Minister of Spain says at least 500 people have died in the 10-day heat wave that Europe continues to endure. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez referenced the climate emergency as the reason for the extreme heat wave. In Greece, Spain, Slovenia, and France, firefighters face significant wildfires and residents have had to flee. Britain hit record temperatures of 105 degrees Fahrenheit this week. Climate demonstrators protested on London's busiest roadway for climate action. Critics say those British politicians vying to replace Boris Johnson have been ignoring the climate crisis. During the Climate Comedy Cohort Fellowship, a group of comedians is learning from climate scientists and performing live shows. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Climate change is serious, so serious that it needs to be joked about, says Kenise Mobley. She's the Comedy Projects Coordinator at the Center for Media and Social Impact at American University.
When it comes to communicating about hard topics, I think there's this impulse to do like meaty, hard, dramatic work.
But she says it's usually people who are already concerned who seek out that content. Comedy may engage a wider audience.
When it comes to actually getting people to see something from a different perspective, comedy really is the best tool to do that. Even if you don't agree 100% with what the person is saying, you're more likely to give it a listen because you're getting that laughter out of it.
So Mobley's team partnered with the nonprofit Generation 180 to create the Climate Comedy Cohort. It's a six-month fellowship in which nine comedians learn from climate experts, create original comedy inspired by the topic, and get feedback. Participants will perform live shows together and compete to win up to $20,000 to support a proposed project. And Mobley hopes they all go on in their careers to get people laughing about climate change and serious about fixing it. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is wary of this summer.
Is this the summer before the fall? Most of the country in southern Europe setting heat records with some huge fires. Fairly mild summer here, but August and September still to come. We need to celebrate, but the cost of travel, forget the price of gas. What about the rising price of food as the grocery shelves get sparser again? And the COVID cost of gatherings. Businesses closed today because of sick staff. The new variant seems to prefer the vaccinated and boosted. I'm glad 18 congressfolk, one of them a man, stepped up yesterday and got arrested protesting in front of the extreme court. While in Indiana, the attorney general and Fox News outed the doctor who gave the raped 10-year-old an abortion, and now the doctor needs to be in witness protection. Let's get excited about the January 6th hearings, because jailing Trump will make everything better. It's not a dry heat. It's a rotting systemic heat. Society is slowly accelerating crumble. I'm going to find me a cool lake and float a couple months. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips to 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Roz Brown, Edwin Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Sojourner Truth Radio. At 9, hear Row on the Rocks, the first episode in a limited series produced by KBOO's Claire Rosciato, tracing the lead-up to the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. At 10, it's American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler, then at 11, Between the Covers. All of these KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. I'm speaking with Kay Rambo of Street Roots about a new article tracing the city's failures in their referral process for homeless sweeps. Stay with us.
This is Cy Khan here at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, a liberated zone. Listen to community radio, support community radio. It belongs to us.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national